This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. This is the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and it's just Rachel and me in the studio tonight.
It is. It's just the two of us. It's a little cold and a little quiet.
And there's been a few bugs going around, and that's explaining Mark's absence tonight, but we'll make it through without him, I hope.
Unfortunately, we didn't get enough time knowing that Mark would not be here to replace him with a stuffed fluffy animal of some kind, so unfortunately it is just Claudine and myself. No stuffed animals. But we do have some peas for you tonight. The peas are Pentecost and politics. But we're going to start with our holy day of the week. And we've got our theme song again. So here it is for you.
This week's holy day, which is this coming Sunday, is the Christian festival of Pentecost. And this word literally means 50 days because it takes place 50 days after Easter. So this is, in fact, the end of the Easter season. It's been Easter for 7 weeks.
That is a very long time to be celebrating something. Well, I feel like it's a long time to
Easter
celebrate
is,
something.
Easter is the biggest festival of the church, so it's kind of a big party. It's worth celebrating.
I know. That's surprising. It took me until my adult years to realise that Easter is actually bigger than Christmas. Yes.
Yeah, but you can't have one without the other, though.
That's true.
So what's Pentecost? Pentecost in the Christian church celebrates the arrival of the Holy Spirit among the disciples. As we saw last week when we talked about ascension, in the Acts of the Apostles, the resurrected Jesus spent 40 days with his disciples and was then lifted up into the clouds. The next chapter of Acts talks about the Holy Spirit appearing among a crowd of disciples in the form of a rushing wind and tongues of fire. Following this, the disciples, who had come from different parts of the empire, were able to speak in different languages but understood each other. And the Apostle Peter said that God had sent the Holy Spirit to them so that they could prophesy. And this is often described as the birthday of the church because it's the day that the power to teach and prophesy was given to Jesus' followers. Pentecostalism describes a Christian movement that arose in the early 20th century that sought to bring new energy to the church. And it's Pentecostal because it emphasizes the role of the Holy Spirit in the lives of Christians. This is also important for the Orthodox churches, but has been less significant for Catholic and mainline Protestant churches. Pentecostal churches emphasize practices that can be traced back to that first day in Pentecost, such as speaking in tongues and being slain in the Spirit. And I talked to Rachel a bit about this before because these practices haven't been part of my experience, but it is for a lot of Christians.
Yeah, so it's not something that my church growing up in actively did. So you didn't ever have to be baptized in tongues, which a lot of Pentecostal churches did. So I grew up in a charismatic Baptist church, but it had lots of like Pentecostal-y themes to it. But I do actually recall the first time I ever saw someone speaking in tongues and someone actually falling to the ground and shaking. And I was like, oh my goodness, is he okay? Is he okay? Like freaking out as a young teenager, I probably would have been.
So you hadn't heard about it. You hadn't know what was going on.
I'd heard of speaking in tongues, you know, going to all those big rally event type things. They always say, you know, if you speak in tongues, you can speak in tongues tonight. This is an open place. And, you know, talking their voices that are talking to everybody out there. And so I'd heard of speaking in tongues, but I'd never experienced, I think I'd heard people like muttering in church, and as a child, dad or mum had said, oh, that's just someone speaking in tongues, but it wasn't really talked about or anything. And then, yeah, it was during a time when we had visitors from a church in the USA visiting us, in which this person experienced these spiritual overtakings. Is that a good word for it? So he fell to the ground and he was like almost convulsing, and then he was laughing hysterically, and people around him were talking quite loudly in languages that weren't known. It was confronting because it wasn't something that I was used to, but then, you know, once mum and dad explained that that's normal, I was like, oh, cool, that's fun.
It's actually interesting. There's following the story of Pentecost in the Bible, there's some people who are watching this happen, and they say, it's only the early morning, so why are these people all drunk? Because that's really what it looked like to them. Is that what it sort of...
Definitely. Well, at that age, I hadn't seen drunk people before, but I thought that maybe he was having a fit. Hmm. So a similar thing, something that you would see, like that makes sense. You try and make sense of it, but it's something that doesn't make sense, really. I don't know.
Yeah. So, as I said, Pentecost is a feast that's celebrated by, the story is celebrated by all churches, but it's something that's taken a bit more significance for newer churches, something that, you know, perhaps they could teach and bring this new energy into some of the other churches.
Yeah.
So we'll shortly hear a song that takes place on a Pentecostal morning.
Joy 94.9.
You are on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and that was Brompton Oratory by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. We were having a bit of a chat about
Pentecost,
and that was a song based on Pentecost morning.
On a spiritual experience.
A spiritual experience. It definitely sounded a bit spiritual, didn't it? But tonight, we're actually going to talk about that awful thing that everyone tells you not to talk about, and that is politics and religion.
Yeah, so the two awful things.
The two awful things, and sometimes joined together. So we know that there is a great history of religion in politics, and how...
And politics and religion.
And politics in religion as well. Definitely, they go hand in hand. So we're going to explore a bit of that tonight. If you have any questions, or if you have statements, if you know stuff that we maybe don't know as well, because we don't claim to know everything, make sure you send us a message. I'll remind you, the number is 0427-JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. But definitely get involved. We want to know your opinions as well.
So thanks to Mark for suggesting this topic and then getting unwell and not being able to talk about it. So.
Oh, how dare you get unwell.
I mean, I think this could be interesting because I'm a very politically involved person and Rachel isn't. So
yes.
I mean, that's in a way, that's, I think part of the question is, why do people say don't talk about politics?
Yes. Well, Claudine, I have a question for you straight off the bat. Why are you political? What makes politics important to you?
I think if you look at what politics actually means, there's various definitions, but it's things like the process of making decisions that apply to a group of people. So, talking about power and how it's distributed among people, the role of governing over people, over communities. So in a way, at its very basic level, no person who lives in society with other people is immune to politics. It's part of what it is to be humans who interact with each other. So there's politics, right, with a big P, which is like government and stuff, and then there's, you know, small p, like workplace politics and family politics.
So even here at Joy, we've got politics because absolutely. Just gotten a new general manager. So does that mean that's political?
Not necessarily. No? It kind of depends on, if there is. I don't know, but you know, there's a number of decisions that go into employing someone, and, mm-hmm. and hopefully it's all above board. But you hear about it in other workplaces where people have been employed because of relationships that they have with other people, and not necessarily because they meet the selection criteria. But it's, I guess, going back to why I'm involved, it's for me, it's both politics and religion are about ways that people express their values, and their ways that guide people's values as well. So it's a bit of a circular thing that some people get their values from politics or religion, and for others it becomes a way of expressing those values. So I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that the government does that I don't agree with. There's other stuff that they do that I agree with and wish that they did more. And so for me, being involved in politics means doing things that, because the government's supposed to represent the people.
Yes.
It's being involved is a way of making my opinions known to the people who represent me.
There you go. My view is the government politicians cannot represent all people because people are so different. And I find it really difficult to follow political parties at all, because there's things that are positives and negatives about all of them. I don't think there's any that perfectly fit where I would be happy to be in. So I like to remain politically unaffiliated. It gives me other opportunities during election time to do things that I wouldn't be able to do if I was politically affiliated as well. And I just find it goes in that too hard basket.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think for me, political parties are like churches or religious groups. Like, no denomination or religious group is perfectly right, because I'm not a purist in that way. And there are people who do believe that their religion or their political party is completely perfect, but I don't think that's very realistic. And there's a lot of people who are in a political party or who are in a church because they agree with the majority of what that organization believes, and they want to try and change the other things from inside.
That's right. And I think in terms of religion as well, that's why I now also don't identify as religious in terms of any particular religion. I accept all religions, and I see the value in all religions. I see good points and bad points in all of them, and in spiritualities as well, because, you know, there are, you know, everyone has their own spirituality that can be outside of or within their religion as well. So I think for me, everything is just too broad, and I don't want to be put into a box. I don't want to be in the too hard basket. I don't want to be in a basket. I just want to be free.
Yeah, well, I guess if you look at the sort of origin of political parties, I think the original idea behind democracy was that the people in government represent the rest of the people, and they would start forming into factions just because it's a bit of a natural human thing to gravitate towards people who are similar to you or who have similar ideas. It's sort of what's comfortable, and that's what parties are. They're groups of people who broadly share similar values and can work together. And it's interesting to compare the political system in somewhere like Australia, the US, or the UK, which is where we've got our systems from, which are very competitive. You've got generally two parties, two big parties that are seen as fighting against each other, and the other smaller parties and the independents are people are always asking which side are you on? Are you closer to this or that other party? Whereas in Europe, in continental Europe, it's more common to have larger coalitions and alliances. So it's still competitive, but there's also a sense that two parties with different ideas can actually work together, whereas in Australia,
no.
You talk about a hung parliament and people say it's like a horror, whereas I had a French friend who was saying on Facebook, just explain, you know, he's living in Australia, he's saying, just explain to me why Australians are afraid of a hung parliament because we do it in Europe all the time.
See, we might even have to go into that further because I'm not even sure what exactly it means to have a hung parliament. But it looks like we've actually gotten a message through from Mark. What does Mark have to say?
Well, he's saying he's monitoring and contributing from afar. So hello, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Probably in your sick bed or wherever. And yes, another comment is arguably political parties and religions are trying to achieve the same thing, a better society. I think ultimately that's the goal. It's just that different parties and different religions have very different views on how to achieve that.
Joy 94.9.
And that was Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil, who have announced that they will be getting the band back together and start performing again next year. So that's great. Great joy to Gen X's everywhere, I'm sure. Beds Are Burning was released in 1987. Doesn't that make me feel old?
Oh, I wasn't born
yet. You weren't even born today.
Okay. But Claudine, I know this, but do you know this? Why are they politically affiliated?
Midnight Oil?
Yeah. Why are we playing that on a political show?
Well, I chose Beds Are Burning because it's an especially political, has a political story. So it's to do with Indigenous reconciliation and land rights, and it was in fact John Howard was heard to have said that Beds Are Burning was his favorite Midnight Oil song, when which was a bit ironic since he was refusing to apologize to the Indigenous people throughout his prime ministership. So Midnight Oil performed this song in the 2000 Olympics, all wearing shirts with the word sorry written across it. So that was a bit embarrassing for the Prime Minister at the time.
Well, that in itself is a political stand,
exactly.
Isn't
so
it?
It's so it's a song which took on another life when the band was given this opportunity and this huge stage. So why is Midnight Oil, why did they stop in 2002? Peter Garrett, the lead singer, the great bald one.
With the fabulous dance moves.
The unique dance moves. He joined the Labour Party and entered Parliament in 2004. And so he was in Parliament for, I think, 2004 to 2013. And he was, when Labour was in Parliament, was in government, Peter Garrett was at various times Minister for Arts and Education and the Environment. So some of the big interests of his.
Funny story about that. So in primary school, we had to do a school assignment on something that he was to do with. And I went home and was talking, you know, getting mum and dad's help. And mum was like, do you know who he is? And I was like, nope. And so she, it must have been
pulled
whilst Google was around and was able to Google him and showed me who this man was. And it didn't make sense to me as to why a politician was singing and dancing. And it never registered that he was doing that before he was a politician, but it makes sense now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my introduction to Midnight Oil and Peter Garrett.
All right. Oh, well, you know, they were the first band that I heard of in Australia because I was in primary school when they released Diesel and Dust, so that's showing my age. But and I mean, Peter Garrett's an interesting person because he's at various times he's talked about his faith and being he's been a member of the Uniting Church and the Anglican Church at different times. And there was actually an interview I heard recently when he released his memoir, and because he was in government under Kevin Rudd, who was also very vocal about being a kind of progressive Christian kind of prime minister, and Rudd was very upfront about his faith, was often held press conferences outside church. So there was a discussion about whether, you know, Kevin Rudd and Peter Garrett were kind of being in the same in the same government, being in the same party, also had similar religious views. But it appeared that Peter Garrett was a bit more independent and also more critical of Kevin Rudd, that Rudd sort of said certain things but didn't live up to what he believed.
I still remember Kevin 07, that happening. I wasn't old enough to vote, of course.
Kevin 07 was on my birthday, so that was like a special birthday present to me.
There you go. Should religious people get involved in political debates, and do they have a place on Q&A? That's a tough question. Well, where do you start with that, Claudine?
Well, it's almost like, I mean, part of it is saying, well, should anyone not be allowed to talk about politics? If politics affects everyone, then shouldn't everyone have a say? But I think when I think about questions like that, part of it is thinking, it's one thing to be a kind of human who lives in the society and have views about it, and it's another to be in a position of power, whether, say, if you're the leader of a church, you have the potential to say that your church believes in a certain thing, or that members of that church should believe that thing, and I think that's a crossing a line. And I mean, there have been many times in history where churches or other religious groups have almost said that members of their religion should vote a certain way or should follow a certain ideology, and that's I think the line that shouldn't be crossed. But just being a minister or being a religious person and having political views, I don't think there should be anything against that.
My brain is like ticking all these things over at the same time, because it is a topic that I wouldn't say comfortable with, because I don't have the education. But like, why is it that people think that religion should not be involved in politics when it kind of has been since the beginning of time? Like, did politics not really start because of...
No, politics started when people started living together in the same world.
Okay.
I think one of the reason that people say that religion shouldn't be in politics is because there are so many examples of where it's gone wrong.
Right. So is it detrimental for a person of political leadership, whether they're leading a party or, you know, whatever else, is it detrimental for them to come out as religious?
Well, in Australia, clearly not, because most of the members of the Liberal Party are very open about having a very conservative kind of religion. So that's seen as, nowadays it's not... It's and in other countries as well, like the US, you couldn't imagine having an American president who was not Christian.
Yes. But then there's the whole, there are other parties as well. And like, we can't forget that there's other parties other than Liberal and Labor. And there are parties who are specifically based around religion, who give religion a really bad name, especially being in politics.
Yep.
Like, how do we get around that sort of stuff? Like, how is it that they can be viewed so negatively? Obviously, I know, because they have horrendous policies.
I think the group that we're thinking about, I think the problem is that their name aims to represent, all Christians when they don't.
Yes.
So, you know, if there's a party that's called the Australian Christians, that's actually false advertising, because they don't represent all of us.
Right. But do you think then a party like that would, so just say Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten, who are in the running for being Prime Minister, right? So just say they both came out and said, oh, well, I'm a Christian too. Do you think that gives, or if one said they are and one said they aren't, do you think that parties like that give them a bad name, and so people don't want to vote for them because their religion, although it's not that party, am I making sense?
Yeah, look, there are people, and things like groups like the Australian Christian Lobby will try and encourage people to vote on religious lines. And in previous, like, okay, again, when I was a kid, in the 80s, John, not John, sorry, Bob Hawke. Bob Hawke was an agnostic. He came out and said, I'm an agnostic, I don't know. And I think Gough Whitlam was also an agnostic. And so it was, in fact, in the 70s and 80s, it was easier to be an agnostic prime minister than a religious one. And so there's been this, more recently, this kind of going back to, I mean, it's not necessarily backwards or forwards, but it's politics has become... Australian politics has become more taken over by certain voices within the church, and that's alienated a lot of people who are not Christian, and also alienated a lot of Christians who don't agree with these policies. That was 74-year-old Aretha Franklin at the Kennedy Center Awards to honor Carole King, singing You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. That was the performance that brought a tear to the eyes of Barack and Michelle Obama. Aretha Franklin also sang at Barack Obama's inauguration, which was, of course, a really significant event as the first black president of the United States. We did look up the recording of Aretha Franklin singing My Country, 'Tis of Thee, but she said in an interview that the weather was terrible, it was cold, and it was not good to her voice, so she wasn't actually happy with that recording. So we thought maybe we'll spare her that.
And if you haven't seen the video that accompanies that song, it's well worth it. It's incredible. Like, seeing her up on the stage and seeing the way that it's impacting the crowd, you kind of get more of the idea of how great she actually is.
But just thinking, if Aretha Franklin was 74, so she was in her lifetime, she's seen the United States go from this, when segregation of black and white was still active, to now that when you've got this black president. And we were thinking about some historical examples of different aspects of the relationship between religion and politics. And one that I thought of was Martin Luther King Jr., who, of course, his name came from... Martin Luther, the great reformer. Martin Luther King Jr., who inspired the American Civil Rights Movement, was a black Baptist minister, and black churches, you know, predominantly black churches, were instrumental in spreading his message and spreading the movement. And in fact, another leader of the Civil Rights Movement, Malcolm X, actually became a Muslim. So there's, I think those are two, you know, examples of people outside government who are living out their values in both political and religious ways. But some other examples that might be a bit illustrative of this tricky relationship between politics and religion. One that comes to mind for historians of the church is the Roman Emperor Constantine, who in the 4th century was the first emperor to convert to Christianity. So prior to this point, Christianity was a small and sometimes underground new religious movement. Constantine converted, and he declared that Christians should not be persecuted. And in fact, he promoted the building of churches and monuments and helped facilitate major Christian meetings, such as the First Council of Nicaea, which declared a lot of the doctrine that that the church still holds to today. So from Constantine's time, Christianity became tangled up with the Roman Empire. And this is seen by some critics of the church, as well as some Christians, as the beginning of compromise between church and state. So when people talk about the separation of church and state, sometimes it's about getting religion out of politics, but you can equally say we need to get, we want to get government out of religion. We don't mind government interfering in how religion behaves. And that's got multiple, that works out in multiple ways. It may mean that government does government have a right to, you know, to prevent churches from discriminating against same-sex people? Or does government have the right to say you're not allowed to perform weddings of same-sex people? Because there are religions that have different views on marriage equality, and that can affect sort of how the religion relates to government.
I have no comments to make on that.
Oh, I thought I'd sort of bring it back to the, you know, LGBT stuff.
Yes,
maybe
that's a good idea.
We talked about the holiday today, but we should also note that today is Israeli Independence Day. And so Mark sent us a few notes about the State of Israel, which was only formed in the modern State of Israel was formed in the 20th century and established as a Jewish homeland. There's a Jewish notion of the people of Israel, which is based in religion and is which you can find in the Hebrew scriptures, but it's evolved to a cultural concept. So all Jews, regardless of their practice or not, are able to return to the Jewish homeland. And I've heard of people who've gone from, you know, America or Europe and migrated to Israel because they're Jews. And politically, Israel has parties that adhere to the various Jewish denominations, and this influences decision making. So this is an example of a state that was built for people of a particular religion and recognizes the different flavors or denominations within that religion. But it's not only for Jews. There are religious Jews, secular Jews, and people of other religions who live in Israel. But it's one of the more explicit examples where a particular religion dominates.
Mm, it is. Yes. I think I've given my two cents on everything that
your
I can.
Your politics out.
I'm not informed enough to be making comments on this. There's facts, and I don't have opinions based on those facts. One thing I do find really interesting about US politics versus Australian politics is the fact that there are people like Aretha Franklin and Beyonce and other powerful, influential celebrities who get behind politics. It's like it's a thing. People say to celebrities, who are you going to vote for? I also do a show on Monday mornings, and I spent quite some time talking about Donald Trump and the people, the celebrities who are vocally against Donald Trump. There are a few who are for him, but bigger named celebrities who are not for Donald Trump. Who sings "Working 9 to 5"? What's her name?
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton. Sorry, I had a mind blank. I could picture it in my head. Anyway, Dolly has come out speaking very highly of Hillary Clinton and said some hilariously not lovely things about Mr. Trump. That's something that Australian celebrities, in inverted commas, don't do, is get behind political parties.
Apart from, say, Peter Garrett.
Well, yes, yeah. but
he's an exception.
He became a politician. He wasn't, you know, singing at someone's vote for me speech.
No, but he was a very political person long before the Labor Party.
He would, like, show up at Labor Party functions?
There was a lot of wondering about whether he would join Labor, the Greens, Democrats, or something else.
Okay.
Because he was always seen on that side. But
right.
But, yeah, he's always been an activist. And I think there's a difference between...
Yeah, but so he wasn't got, like, hooting for a particular political party.
So I think what happens in Australia is that people comment on issues more so than commenting for parties. CDs and benefit concerts of people rallying behind the environment or refugees or same-sex marriage, but not necessarily joining up at a party.
You are listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We've come to the end of our political show for tonight. Thanks to Mark for contributing from afar, but it's a big good night from Rachel.
And good night from Claudine. And we've had some Australian and some US songs, so we'll finish off with a song by Billy Bragg, Waiting for the Great Leap Forwards, which is about mixing pop and politics and has my favourite ending line, "The revolution is just a T-shirt away."
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.